listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
As a psychotherapist for the past 4 decades, I've found helping people who are addicted to drugs or alcohol one of the most difficult and challenging issues with which to work. A therapist can't be with someone all the time, so a recovery center or AA meetings become part of the treatment plan. And part of the difficulty for me has been that the recovery sought in these approaches is not sought as a lasting change. Alcoholics, for example, are taught they have a disease and they'll always be in recovery and not recovered. And this idea goes against the understanding I've had in my transpersonal approach that our life problems are solvable, that we can recover fully, we can move on to other things. So I've been wanting someone to step forward and share a recovery system that moves people beyond recovery and into living a real life. That's what my guest today, Lee McCormick, is all about. He has blended deep spiritual change with addiction recovery, and he offers solutions for people with addictions. We're talking today with Lee about what's in his spirit recovery medicine bag. Welcome to Full Power Living, where we bring you a wide variety of guests and programs with the aim of understanding the power and importance of human emotions. If you have questions or comments, you're invited to call our toll-free number, which is 888-498-0570, 888-498-0570, and that number is listed on both of the chats on Blog Talk Radio and EmotionalPro.com. Well, Lee McCormick has been a creative force in the mental health and recovery arena for more than 15 years. He's the founder of the Ranch Recovery Center in Nunnally, Tennessee, and the Canyon Treatment Center in Malibu, California. He's also co-founder of Nashville's Integrative Life Center and IOP/PHP Community Recovery Program in Nashville. Through the organization Spirit Recovery Incorporated, Lee facilitates the production of healing and recovery conferences and spiritual journeys around the world. And he's also the executive producer of the documentary Dreaming Heaven, in which he plays a leading role. This is a documentary which we featured here on Full Power Living about a year and a half ago, and it chronicles the experiences of 18 individuals on a 5-day journey at Teotihuacan. Obviously, I'm not used to saying it. McCormick has led many journeys to this place of power and has developed a far-reaching relationship with the mystery of the shamanic world that is present there. He's co-author of Spirit Recovery Medicine Bag, which we're talking about today. You can find him on the web at spiritrecovery.com. Lee McCormick, it's a pleasure to welcome you to Full Power Living.
Well, thanks. It's great to be here.
Thanks. Welcome in off the range, too. So it's really great to be able to talk with you about an approach to healing, especially one that relates to recovery, that helps people become comfortable. And you say that they need to be comfortable holding the space while an older and wiser part of them begins to build a new neural network. And I'd like, this is what you were aiming for when you wrote Spirit Recovery Medicine Bag. So could you talk a little bit about what that's all about?
Sure. It was interesting how the book came about. Mary Faulkner, who Mary and I wrote the book together. The first half of the book, of course, is my story. And we kind of backed into that. We started writing a book that was what the second half of the book amounts to, where each chapter was a different practice or a different perspective, point of view, that between Mary or myself, we have either experienced personally, well, I guess we probably experienced all of it personally, but it's things that we have witnessed and realized impacted the lives of people because we both, Mary's been working in the healing field, the recovery business, she's a licensed therapist, for I think 30, 35 years. And I've only been around about 15. But what's always been my guideline in any kind of work that I've done with people is to watch the people. You know, I'm not a professionally trained therapist, so I have an open perspective that, you know, being a witness to seeing the lights come on and being a witness to seeing them become inspired, to see people lay down their guard, to see them be willing to step forward, to open up, to consider different points of view, different ways of looking at themselves and their life. That's what I based my choices on as I put the programs together that I've created, and that's what I based the selections that I've shared in the book. You know, the healing process is a process that I believe you have to have faith in for it to work. And the way that we have come to frame and characterize recovery as such, quote-unquote recovery, has largely become a practice of learning how to manage your disease, how to manage your abnormality, how to manage your character defects and your shortcomings, as you would say in the 12-step world. And interestingly enough, you know, Bill W., who wrote the Big Book, or who was co-creator of the Big Book, just said emphatically that, and we do recover, period. You know, there was no run-on sentence there, and we do recover. And that is the point, and I appreciate what you said early on. You know, the point is to self-discover the issues that are challenging us, the agreements, the behaviors, the energetic patterns that we've created without knowing any better, usually, and then learn how to unravel that stuff, and then shift and grow beyond the need to medicate. You know, and that sounds simple. It actually is simple.
Yeah, my therapist, when I was there working with her for a number of years, kept saying, change happens in an instant. And I said, yes, but what about all the stuff you do first? You know, because there's a lot. Thank you. The tagline at the end of this show is pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become. And I was interested to see you following this philosophy in Spirit Recovery Medicine Bag and what you said there, because you explained that you're focused on activating a person's inner healing, pointing them in the direction of dreaming their healing, that is, imagining what it will be like to end being sick and dependent and instead become healthy and free. And in your understanding, what is it that actually works in this approach?
Oh gosh, that's a big question. I think what works varies. There are some basic tenets to healing. And the truth is, what works, or what I've witnessed as working, is offering people a menu, offering them an array of experiences. And I'm talking now in the structure or the format of a treatment experience where you go check in somewhere for 30 days or 60 days or 90 days. And what I've seen that works is offering people an array of experiences, and those experiences are, you know, by a thread of, for instance, at our Integrative Life Center in Nashville, we have a track that's connected to Refuge Recovery, which is a Dharma practice. It's, you know, it's based in Buddhism, it's based in mindfulness and meditation, and actually working the tools of the Dharma in self-discovery and in recovering yourself. It was developed by a man named Noah Levine. Noah's a great guy, he's a friend of mine. Noah's written several books about recovery. So we offer a Dharma practice. We also go to 12-step meetings. We also participate in different ceremonies, Native American-oriented ceremonies, or ceremonies that I've become involved in and that have learned to carry in my work in Mexico or in Peru. And so we work in what people call a shamanic realm. It's just actually, in my opinion, what we've called shamanism is just living a relationship with the awareness of creation, as opposed to the primary relationship in our life being the construct of our mind and our belief system. And so we offer an array of different experiences, you know, and different people resonate with different practices. And to be respectful of the individual who's seeking the help, I don't know how you're not being respectful of an individual if you put them in a treatment program and you tell them there's one way to do this and that's what we're going to do and that's how it works, and if you don't want to do it our way, you're going to fail and you're going to be wrong and it's not going to work for you. It's just insane. That sounds like a cult. It doesn't sound like a healing program. And so, you know, and by offering individuals an array of experiences, it offers an opportunity to help them disarm and lay down their defense mechanisms. We get so beat up in this world, even if it's self-inflicted, we get so beat up, we get so worn out, we're so tired, we're full of judgment and fear and self-loathing. We inherit a legacy that's just loaded with abuse and trauma. You know, all that stuff was waiting for us when we were born into this world, and we inherit it. It's part of the human journey, is the inheritance of the legacy, whether the legacy is full of love and light or the legacy is woven of fear and trauma and abuse. We inherit it nevertheless, and it's not personal. And, you know, the way out is to unravel it one person at a time, experience one behavior at a time, unravel that stuff, and then learn how to let it go and stop defining yourself by it, stop feeding it, stop giving it energy and attention, because you can stop that, because at the same time, you're actively and consciously and intentionally being present in the moment with the quality of choices that we're making in creating the life we're going to wake up to tomorrow. So we're not living with the past in front of us anymore. We're living, waking up in the present moment, and we're creating for what we will be moving into in the future.
Okay, so just to recap that, first we unravel one step or one person at a time, then we let it go, and then we stay present in the moment, and from that set our intention or dream into the future moment. Is that correct?
Yeah, and you know, of course, life is not linear as much as our culture has tried to demand it be. So, you know, we're unraveling our history, we're unraveling our traumas, we're unraveling the energy of our addictive behaviors, and we're releasing it, and you may be releasing it for a year or two or three. You may have to let it go over and over and over. You're developing the practice of letting it go. You're not feeding the practice of identifying by it any longer. You're feeding the practice of letting it go.
Right. So you let it go, and then you move into what you want to become.
Then you shift your attention back to the present moment, and what am I doing now? Because, you know, we feed our life based on what we give our attention to. We feed on the objects of our attention. So if my message to myself is, my name's Lee and I'm an addict, and I say that message to myself every day, and I keep carrying that message, then how in the world am I ever gonna actually really move beyond the energetic and the behaviors that need to be there in order for me to be right?
Mm-hmm.
If I keep calling myself an addict every day, then in order for me to be right, that energy is going to continue to follow me. It's going to continue to walk with me as a part of me. And there's nothing wrong with identifying my name's Lee and I'm addicted to. You know, we have to own our mess to change our mess. We have to own what we're working on in order to move into it to do the work, you know, the heart and soul and the energy and the, you know, the physical. We have to own it in order to take our power back from it. So that is to me, you know, one of the non-negotiables. You've got to own the issues that exist in your life. You got to own them 100%.
And what comes up in my brain as you're saying that is you have to own it, but you don't have to claim it as your own.
Well, you don't have to identify yourself as that.
Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I was absolutely addicted to a drug, and I was not the addiction. There was a lot more to me than the addiction. And when I checked myself into a treatment center and went through, you know, my journey in early recovery, I never felt right saying, my name's Lee and I'm an addict. I would say it because I needed to go to meetings. I needed the grounding of going to the meeting. I needed to go to meetings because going to a meeting as opposed to white knuckling it when I was wanting to go get high, going to the meeting, of course, was a wise choice, and it was a much easier choice than just doing battle with its voices in my head. So going to meetings was great, and at the same time, I personally never felt right identifying myself as an addict. There was no argument that I was addicted.
Okay, but so I have a question that you said that you have people go to 12-step meetings in the integrative program that you run. What do people say there?
You know, that we talk about that. Mm-hmm. A lot of times, honestly, living in the world that we live in, one of the masteries I've learned working with the shamanic world as long as I have, the mystery school world, is that, you know, there's nothing to be gained by just slapping the dragon, as we speak. And so you may say, as I did, you may say, my name is, and I'm an addict, or my name is, and I'm an alcoholic, but you know full well that's not your identity. That's not what you are. But in some meetings, if you go in and say, my name's Lee, and I'm a recovering person, which is what I ended up saying, you know, you may get a lot of pushback. I don't know. It depends on the nature of where you live and the meetings that you go to. The point being, you can take advantage of the gifts of the 12-step program. You can take advantage of having that community and having that opportunity to step out of your reality for a moment and go put your attention in that room for an hour and take a break. You can do that without drinking the Kool-Aid. You don't have to drink the Kool-Aid. You don't have to You don't have to buy the whole story. You don't have to suit up and take that role as somebody else's story of what you must do to be good enough now. You don't have to go that far. You can make use of the tool. You can make use of the tool, but you don't have to go all the way down the rabbit hole. Some people really align and identify and are 100% comfortable with the rules and the whole MO of the 12-step scene. And if you're completely comfortable with it, then that's awesome. That's great. And you own that choice and you move into that, and it works for you. The truth is, you know, as we all know who've been around this business, that, you know, some 20-25% of the people identify with the 12-step program and stay with it, and the other 75% or 80% don't. And that's a fact. That's a fact. So what are the other 75% or 80% doing? You know, and my point has always been, if we're really here to help people, then we need to focus on how can we be the most effective at bringing people into a place of healing and authenticity and taking responsibility for the life that they're living and the life that they have the opportunity to create. How do we reach them? How do we invite them into their process? It's not my process. It's your process.
Yes, that's a really, really good point. I came up with another phrase. My name is Eileen, and I've allowed addiction to take over my life.
Mm-hmm.
That's another way of saying it. I just it popped into my head. Well, it's time for our first break. I'm talking today with Lee McCormick, who's a mental health and recovery expert, author, and spiritual teacher. He's the author of Spirit Recovery Medicine Bag. And we're going to be talking about how you actually move into your authentic life when we return here on Full Power Living following these messages.
As a parent, have you found all the parenting information you've been hearing lately a bit confusing? Are you having trouble sorting out the best response to your defiant child, or feeling hopeless about regaining respect from your teen, or determining whether your actions as a parent are the right ones? Instead of the usual pressures of parenting that you've been experiencing, you can partner with your child, raising incredible kids who are destined to become amazing adults. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, giving you the opportunity to become the incredible parent for incredible kids. We have the method and the tools. You bring your optimism for learning and the kids. Raise Incredible Kids offers a comprehensive system for raising kids who are responsible, make their own great decisions, and become immune to peer pressure. To get you ready for this new era in parenting, get my free 10-page report, Incredible Communication That Helps You Create Incredible Kids, by visiting RaiseIncredibleKids.com now. That's RaiseIncredibleKids.com.
Welcome back to Full Power Living. I have a few announcements. Next week, Veronica Tugaleva reveals the love mindset as we discuss self-love and peace of mind. That's Thursday, September 4th at 9 a.m. Pacific Time. I'd also like to invite you to sign up at emotionalpro.com to be on our mailing list, because I'd like to share details of our upcoming shows, and also I'm involved in a lot of interesting projects that I'd like to share with you. That's emotionalpro.com. For those of you who are listening in Ireland, I'm going to be in Dublin, Ireland, speaking at the LinkedIn Parenting 2.0 conference on life skills for children on September 15th and 16th, and on September 13th, I'll be at the Mount Oliver Retreat Center in Dundalk, Ireland, giving an Introduction to Accessing Universal Intelligence session. So we've got wonderful shows ready for you when I'm off globetrotting, so please continue to listen. My guest today is Lee McCormick, who's author of the Spirit Recovery Meditation Journal, which is Meditation for Reclaiming Your Authenticity. He's also co-author of Dreaming Heaven, The Beginning is Near. That's a book and a movie that you can get. I discovered on Amazon for a very reasonable price, and it gives you a lot of background information on what I'll be talking with Lee about briefly this morning, the healing experiences in Teotihuacan. So he has four daughters, two granddaughters, and lives in Tennessee, Malibu, and Teotihuacan. That's what it is, Teotihuacan, Mexico. Now, Lee, your wife has written a book called My Kitchen Cure, and when I was investigating that, it occurred to me we're all in recovery in some way. This book is about recovering from autoimmune disease. My recovery was from an abusive childhood. So when we talk about recovery as we are today, we're really talking, it seems to me, about what things we all need to know about. You have comments?
Well, I think that's absolutely true. My wife's name is Mee. So it's Lee and me. She's M-E-E.
I love that.
Yeah, I do too. She's an amazing woman. It's a big conversation. And again, I think it's fairly simple. It's just that we humans and the way we live these days and the cultures that we live in, we are so driven chasing the values that our culture tells us we must chase in order to be good enough. You know, we're so busy trying to be good enough. We're so busy trying to acquire things and earn respect and, you know, make more money and look better and be groovy or cool or, you know, the boss, that we're so enmeshed and absorbed and obsessed with the external world and the outside-in way of living that we've really lost awareness and respect and understanding of the very foundational truth, you know, that the quality of our life is based on the quality of our choices. And I mean that in the simplest and most fundamental format and ways. You know, and for instance, and it's all congruent. For instance, the quality of what we choose to eat is food. In our culture today, almost 90% of all the food everybody eats is processed. There's additives in it. There's chemicals in it. There's, you know, there's all kinds of stuff in it. You go buy canned goods in the grocery store and you assume that, you know, if I buy a can of beans, it's just beans and water. Well, not necessarily. And the beans have been pre-cooked and they've been processed and the plants are grown, you know, with herbicides and pesticides, and there's chemicals innate in the cellular structure of the plant because the chemicals were present when the plant was formed. And then, you know, then we have the even all the frozen foods and the it's just process. And our bodies were not designed to be ingesting some 80,000 different chemicals on a daily basis, and that, in fact, is where we're at today as a result of a simple lack of awareness and mindfulness and a lack of respect for the foundational cause and effect nature of life. You know, so we have epidemic autoimmune diseases, and I mean epidemic. There's 100,000 people in the United States with autoimmune diseases, and the numbers are just growing off the chart. And it's the same thing with addictions and dealing with a lot of mental health issues, in that, you know, we've inherited a legacy. You inherited the legacy of your family when you were born into this world. You weren't guilty of anything. You weren't responsible for what was here waiting for you. And every one of us is born into that same scenario. We inherit the legacy of our people, of our culture, of our community, of the religions, of the ways that our families, the energy that they held, how congruent or not congruent they were between the things they said and the things they did. And we inherit all that stuff, and then we take it on, and we believe that we are that legacy. We believe that we are that identity, and we're not that identity. We're the one who takes that identity on. It's not unlike what Shakespeare said, and that all the world's a stage, you know, and we're just players. We have completely lost the awareness that we are an expression of life in human form, and we completely lose our true original identity that I say is the light. We are the light and the consciousness that inhabits and animates our body. And we lose relationship with that, and we take on all this stuff, this role, this identity, the nature of culture. We take that on, and we try and make it work, and we believe that it's real and true. And we believe that if we will follow the rules and the guidelines of society, we will end up happy, because that's what we're taught, and that's what our parents believe. And you know what? It's just not true. It's just simply not true, and it's not to be judged. It's just clearly, readily obvious in the world today that there's something really disconnected about the stories that we've been taught we should give our lives over to. And we hold the power to heal the issues that we've inherited. We have the power to heal the legacies that we inherit, and all that woundedness and all that fear and all that suffering. We can heal that stuff, and we can let it go, and we can recreate our lives to be true to ourselves, true to our heart and spirit first, and then find a way to live with your heart and spirit in the world, but don't give your heart and spirit up for the sake of the world. And we can do that. And it's not, you know, it's tough. It takes a lot of courage. It takes a lot of willingness and perseverance. It takes a lot of willfulness. You know, and it's a calling. It's simply, to me, it's a calling to live that way.
As a therapist, Lee, I often remind people that the way they're seeing themselves and the way they're living on the earth is reflective of really a tiny number of people in the, say, 7 billion people that we have on the planet. And that, you know, because those were the people or those were the experiences around us, that's what we've come to believe is us, but we don't have to stay there. Now, what you're doing in your book and in your recovery work is you offer an alternative, a larger-than-life alternative, or many different approaches to get there, so that we can put that in the place of those limiting beliefs, those limitations that we've learned to accept. Is that correct?
It is correct. See, you know, when we're born as children into the world, most of us, we didn't have much choice in who we grew up believing we were, because we were continuously being told who we are and what we are. It's like we were born into an we were downloaded with an identity. We were told what we needed to do to be good enough. And we took all that on, and we lived, you know, from birth to the time that we find ourselves in a place of being able to question it all again, which is recovery to me.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first attention. That's the first phase of life. Then the phase of life that you wake up in as a recovering person is really a place of empowerment. From my perspective, it's a place where, by offering people opportunities to take responsibility, 100% responsibility, for every aspect of the life that you're living today, not from a place of judgment, but to take responsibility from a place of, how can I deal with the things that I'm suffering from? How can I get beyond those things and let them go? And how can I learn to reconnect my own heart and spirit and reclaim faith in myself? And that's what our recovery process is focused on.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks very similar in a lot of ways to traditional recovery work. You know, you use DBT and CBT and psychodrama groups and one-on-ones and, you know, equine therapy and ropes and adventure work. We have an amazing array of tools to use with people. The difference is that the core message is that we're asking you on a daily basis, what are you seeing here? What are you realizing here? What are you choosing to take out of this experience? What are you choosing to believe about yourself? Is that really true? It's even a little bit, Byron Katie is someone I had the pleasure of spending some time with and doing some stuff with, and I love Katie's work. You know, it's instead of telling people, listen, you are an addict, you are an alcoholic, you are an anorexic, this is what you are, and we're going to teach you how to navigate and negotiate and strategize a life dealing with this as your identity. It's like saying, you are the cancer, and we're going to teach you how to learn to live sick and happy, relatively, you know, but never forget that you're the cancer.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, to me, it's so blind and so dated, and doesn't work.
I agree with you. My own therapy work has been transpersonally oriented, and one of my frustrations has been that the world of therapy also tends to hold the idea that if you had difficulties in your childhood, they're forever going to define you, they're forever going to scar your life. And one of the things that's driven me as a therapist, I'm now 71, and I'm still working as a therapist and still offering things in the world, because I want people to get the message that, as far as I'm concerned, everything is set up so that we actually are intended to heal, so that we can get past all of this.
Well, I would agree with you. And it's no, you know, it's no small calling to actually heal and move beyond it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the truth is, and it's funny, actually, once you've moved beyond it, the truth is we're still who we have always been. You know, I didn't become a new person. I didn't
mm-hmm.
become somebody else. I didn't become a better me. I just became the result of making my choices from a different perspective and owning responsibility for the outcomes from a place. I finally learned to live my life from a place, not from judgment, but from a place of, it's simply really cause and effect. It's action reaction,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I have a very deep abiding faith in the truth of what we are really. Human beings are amazing. What we are truly in our heart and soul is the expression of the one that created us. You could say that, you know, we are an expression of God. I don't know if you can separate us. That's a whole other conversation, but I don't, you know, in my simple little mind.
I agree with you.
Yeah, in my simple little mind, I can't tell you where God begins and ends, and it's not my business. I believe that we're an expression of the one that created us, and I believe that we have, for many, 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 many generations, have lived with so little faith in ourselves, and we've given all that faith to the belief systems and the stories of the world, and consequently, we've continued to perpetuate the stories and the effects of living with virtually no faith in the truth of what we are. So if we want to clean up the legacy of humanity, that cleaning and that healing comes about as we return faith to ourselves. And as we release the energy and the suffering and the trauma and the fear that we inherited. And it's just, it's evolution. We humans are amazing because we can consciously and intentionally evolve ourselves. Our DNA changes as we shift our consciousness and the quality and the frequency of our life. And we have the power to do that, you know, and we don't have faith in ourselves. We have to first reclaim the faith in ourselves in order to give ourselves the perspective and the willingness to keep showing up. And that's what recovery's about for me. Recovery is holding the space for people to learn that, you know what, you can trust you and you can have faith in you. And it's okay to not give your faith away to everything else out there. It's really okay. I mean, the greatest faith that I can have in the one that created me, the greatest faith I can express in God, from my point of view, is living with an abiding faith in myself first. Not giving that away to the world, but keeping that to myself. And then living and moving through the world from a place of integrity and honesty and humility. Because there's a natural humility that comes with a deep connection to your own heart and spirit.
Yes, yeah. I would just, to back up a tiny bit, I lived as a single parent for 20 years and developed a system of parenting I now call parenting consciously, and I ended up redefining what discipline was about, that discipline really is about teaching the laws of cause and effect, that if I make this choice, it creates that effect. And then I can examine that effect. If it doesn't work for me, I can make a new one. If it does, I can keep going with it. And that's what real discipline is all about. And I like very much you were saying this is that's a space of non-judgment. That's just I'm a learner here, and I'm going to see what works and what doesn't work. Instead of I'm good, I'm bad, I'm wrong, I'm right, which I think is really powerful.
It is powerful. And, you know, and I actually really learned the framework for this from Don Miguel Ruiz. I worked with Miguel for 3 years. But our attention could be our greatest tool in life, is learning to master what we're giving our attention to.
Yes.
Because we follow our attention around in the world. So if I'm full of judgment and I'm living life by practicing good, bad, right, wrong, you know, judging everything that goes on, everything that I do, then I'm continuously giving energy and attention to the judgment, which is a complete distraction from giving energy and attention to the action of life, to the living of life. And that's another aspect or component of what we do in the Integrative Life Center in Nashville, is to help clients realize, what are you giving your attention to? Where's your, like, I'll ask them 100 times when I'm with them, where's your attention right now? And I say, it's not right or wrong. I want you to be honest. Where's your attention right now? And it's funny, if you do that with a group of people and you keep reframing it that, okay, if you want to be here and you want to learn from this moment and you want to be present in your life at this point in time, learn to master your own attention. Did your attention Did it automatically just wander off into, I wonder what's for lunch today? And you went down that road without knowing it? Or did you intentionally say, I wonder what's for lunch today. Okay, I need to get back to the conversation now.
That is so key. I remember listening to a recording years and years and years ago on love. It was done by the leader of the spiritualist church I was a member of. And the statement really was that love is what the world is all about, and that love is an incredibly supportive energy, and it will support you no matter what. And I got to, it made me think, if love is such a supportive energy, then what's left for human beings to do? And what I came up with is that we have the capacity to determine where we focus the love. It's coming through us, but when we put our focus someplace, we're putting love on that, and love will make it increase.
Yeah, well, I think that's true. I don't know. It's a lot. And, I mean, clearly, we're very multidimensional.
Mm-hmm.
Our lives, even a simple life in this world, is very multidimensional. If it were not, then, explain to me how I live in a physical body and I'm doing, I'm doing physical things. I'm walking around, I'm driving a car, I'm eating. And at the same time, my mind is creating some alternate universe in my own thoughts that's not present anywhere in this world. It's completely etheric in my own thinking. And my attention is moving back and forth between the dimension of the physical, between the etheric nature of the mind. Then my attention will shift into the experience of emotions running through my body. It's really amazing. We just kind of take it all with a grain of salt, because culturally we're not taught to live in relation and conscious of the aspects that make us human.
Mm.
We're not taught, that when you're in an extremely emotional place, or you begin to have an anger, you begin to go into anger, mostly from a lack of awareness place, you just get mad and you go there. You completely go there. Well, from a place of awareness, once you've learned to track your own attention, you realize, okay, I feel this coming, and I may get angry, but I'm aware of the fact that I'm angry.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not on an automatic pilot, Same thing with sadness. Same thing with joy. It's recovery is the opportunity to learn to be aware of where we're going with our attention and our actions at all times. We're not always ahead of the curve, but we don't end up doing something really stupid with no clue whatsoever how we got there.
Well, and oh my, what a relief. We're up to our second break, Lee. We're talking with Lee McCormick today, and we're going to look at some of the things you can do to move into your full authenticity when we return after these messages. We'll be right back.
Know that emotionally, children form the foundation for their life during their first 7 years? Most adults just repeat that early emotional learning, good or bad, over and over for the rest of their lives. If you want to give your child an opportunity to live an emotionally masterful life, then join me, Eileen Dillon, also known as the Emotional Pro, for a free one-hour teleseminar on what it takes for your child to become an emotional master. You'll discover important things like what emotions are designed to do for us, 4 things it's vital for parents to tell their children about emotions, and the single most important thing to do when someone is feeling emotion. Register now at raiseincrediblekids.com. The time has come for us to allow emotions their rightful place in our lives, as the tools and helpers they're created to be. Find out what you need to know in order to give this vital information to your children so they can live emotionally masterful lives. Go now to RaiseIncredibleKids.com for your free Emotional Mastery Teleseminar.
welcome back to Full Power Living. We've got Lee McCormick, mental health and recovery leader and author of Spirit Recovery Medicine Bag. And we're talking today about recovery and authenticity and changing your life. And Lee, as you said earlier, your Spirit Recovery Medicine Bag is almost two books in one, and we've been neglecting the second half of the book. So let's do something. So one of the things that you did is you went on this 5-day spiritual journey in Teotihuacan, and it allowed you to crack open and to see the possibility of going somewhere else. Is that so?
Yes, that's, of course, the first half of the book includes being my story. It includes my first experience in Teotihuacan. And I had the introduction to that happened a few months before in the first sweat lodge that I attended. I was working for a company named called OnSite that's here in Tennessee, and they do 3, 4, and 5-day workshops, really intense. They're a great process, OnSite is. And I was working with them as their equine contractor, doing equine workshops. And a Native American man came and participated in one of those workshops, and we got to know each other during the 4 days that he was here. He invited me to Arizona to a sweat lodge. I had never been in a sweat lodge. I kind of knew something about it, you know, but I had never experienced it, so all I knew was whatever I thought. And I said yes. You know, I had made a deal with myself and with life that when I was invited to do things that in my heart or my gut, I knew could possibly have something to offer, whether it resonated with my personality or not, I would say yes, and I would go try. So I did that with the sweat lodge. Then in my first sweat lodge, a voice said to me, "You come here to that space, to that place," because I was really searching, trying to connect with what was missing. I knew something was missing, and I wasn't, you know, I was 41 years old, and I wasn't going to settle again for the world's official story of what should be good enough or a recovery story of what should be good enough. I was going to connect. And that led me to read the book, The Four Agreements, which I found in a bookstore. And I was so inspired by Miguel's point of view. And then I looked into that further and found that they led journeys to Mexico. So I signed up for a journey. I had no idea what Teotihuacan was. I'd read all of Carlos Castaneda's books, but Don Juan never really talked about Teo in depth. So I got on a plane, flew to Mexico City, got in a van with a bunch of people I'd never seen before, rode out to Teo's, about an hour northeast of Mexico City, got out of the van and turned around and looked down through this avenue that's surrounded by pyramids and temples and plazas, and the whole place lit up like it was 2,000 years before. And I had this flash of exactly what Teotihuacan had looked like in its heyday. And at the same time, it was just like my heart just exploded, and I knew that place. It was the most overwhelming, profound feeling of, I have found home again. And that's never changed. You know, that was 15 years ago now, 14 years ago now. And in that 14 years, I have a relationship with that place like you would have a relationship with your whole family. I keep going back. I keep taking other people. I love it. It's an amazing, amazing place.
Well, there's nothing wrong with going back to visit home over and over again, is there? It sounds like that's what it is. It's home.
Yeah. And it's not so much, you know, yes, it's the geography. It's more the feeling of how it feels to be me in this body, in this world. And then when I put my body in that place with me in it, it's just, it's, literally, it feels like heaven on earth.
Wow. Maybe one day I'll be able to do that. I was told that in a past life, I was a priest in a similar society. So I'm kind of interested. You're piquing my interest anyway.
You can come anytime.
Thank you. Well, now, in the second part of your book, I just want to help people to understand what's in the second part. You actually talk about the medicine bag, and as you said, each chapter is a different kind of approach. One, you talk about meditation and mandalas, and you offer questions, and you offer information about the chakra system and about developing our organic connection to nature. So, and you point out that the medicine bag is usually filled with sacred objects, and not all of these things are sacred, but they offer this smorgasbord, like you were talking about before. It offers readers an opportunity to pick what works for them in terms of building a life that's different from the one that they would like to, quote, recover from. Correct?
Yeah, it does. It's funny because, you know, we will say over and over and over again, you know, I wish my life was different. I want something new. I want to feel better. I want my life to be different. And then the reality comes that, okay, if you really want your life to be different, you have to do something different. And you have to develop a practice of doing something different. And a practice requires time and energy and dedication. And, you know, we're so, I don't know, maybe jaded is the right word. We're so spoiled in our culture, and we want immediate gratification. We want to go to the doctor and get a pill to address what's wrong with us, which only addresses the symptoms, rather than change our diet completely, which would eliminate the cause. Because it's too much trouble.
But Lee, there's so much to get out of not taking the pill. I mean, how do we emphasize that to people? When you really make this kind of change, you don't go back. You just keep going fuller. And why would anybody want to miss that?
They don't understand what they're missing. You know, I think we lose the reference point. We can't even remember what it felt like to be completely free and happy in your body, because you may not have felt that way since you were a little kid.
Mm-hmm.
And so much happens, and we take on so much energy and so much judgment and so much stuff, you know, and bad things happen to people. And we shut down, and we shut down, and we go inward, and we shut down. And it's the way we try and protect ourselves. And the tragedy is that by all of the ways that we come to guard and protect ourselves, we end up limiting the experience of our entire life. And we shut ourselves off, not just from the bad stuff, but we shut ourselves off from the good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, I think we almost have to just be willing to have faith that there can be something greater, because, you know, truly, I didn't know. When I went to treatment, when I realized, you know what, I got to stop living this way, I had no idea how I could live my life any other way. I had no idea what it could be like.
I'm sure you wouldn't have dreamed what you've got now, what you're doing now. Wow.
No. And isn't it funny, I'm sure you've seen it over and over again, that what at one time was this curse of being an addict, what was the great curse at one time now was the doorway to the most amazing life I could have ever imagined. And
right.
I couldn't, you know, I don't know how one could have come without the other. And it doesn't matter.
Right.
Because I'm not there anymore. I'm not
you
living
know what,
that anymore.
What I'm really seeing, particularly with this show, because I interview different people every week, is that more and more and more people are coming forward saying, this is what I lived through, and this is what I learned from it, and this is what I have to offer you. It's just so wonderful that the world is, we people are actually waking up. It's great.
It is great. You know, and it's the time.
Yes.
There's so many traditions, ancient traditions, from the Mayan to the Toltec to the Egyptians to, you know, you look all through the history of humanity. There's a whole, if there were odds on mystical traditions coming true, Vegas would have pretty, there'd be pretty good odds on this being the waking up time. We need to. We need to wake up, because look at where we're headed. Look at what we're doing.
You know,
our way of life is not sustainable. The world as we have grown up in it, and the things that we've come to call normal and expect every day, the way that we've been expecting it is absolutely not sustainable.
Yes.
So change is coming. Change is coming. Either we choose it, can we act on it from a responsible place, or it's going to happen to us as a result of consequences.
Well, that's an interesting place to stop, which we need to do. Let me just share with you that what you write in Spirit Recovery Medicine Bag, I found practical, inspirational, informing, informative. It was also interesting and certainly life-changing. So the power you have found through the process you share with us in your book and the power you've been sharing today is very self-evident. And I found it drew me to want to connect with it. And so I want to thank you for the work that you've done and the discoveries that you've made, and also for now sharing it with all of us so that people have an opportunity to move out of the stuck places of their life. And thank you for doing that, and thank you for being with us on Full Power Living today.
Oh, well, thank you, Eileen. I really appreciate it. It's great to connect with fellow space travelers out there.
Oh, that's so funny. People have been. I wrote a speech, and I put some space travel information in it, and people are going, you're going to close people down. They won't be able to hear it. So...
Well, if we can't have a little fun with this, you know, we're missing the point.
Right. Okay, well, thank you very much for being on Full Power Living.
You're very welcome.
So let me remind you that you can find out more about Lee McCormick at spiritrecovery.com, and go on Amazon and look up the movie Dreaming Heaven. There's both a book and a movie that you can purchase together. It's also a fascinating and Lee starred in that movie and wrote it as well, or wrote part of it. I'm not sure which, but he was there. Next week, join me for my conversation with Veronica Tugaleva on the love mindset as we discuss self-love and peace of mind. You can listen and participate next Thursday, September 18th, 9 a.m. Pacific time, which is noon Eastern. Paul Johnston and Robin Johnston of Fresh Talk Media have been producing our show today. Thank you both for your love and care over the years. And for now, I'm Eileen Dillon, your host, reminding you to pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become.
Living with Eileen Dillon.